Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
How's everyone doing today?
I'm good. How are
you? Good. I'm doing very, very well. This is the Market Made Easy with the Maxwell Group. We are super thrilled to have our friend Kathy Thomas with Driggs Title in the house today to talk title issues with you.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's one of those things that people don't really fully understand who you are, what you do, why you are there throughout the transaction. But it's a big part of protecting the clients. And so we were very thrilled that you agreed to sit down and talk with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited. Kathy has been working with us as a part of our group, has been helping us for a few, oh, goodness, it's been six years. Wow, 6 years. So why don't you tell us a little bit about you and your history in title?
Okay, I've been in title for about the title slash escrow for about 28 years. I started off in Flagstaff as a receptionist.
Wow.
And there is not really any school that you can go to learn the business. You are just trained as you go.
Wow.
And through that, they stuck me in the title department to learn. They stuck me in our account servicing department to learn. And that's how you go in the escrow world. There's just no easy way of diving into it.
Wow.
So it's almost more of like an apprenticeship type situation.
It is. And in today's world, the problem that we're having is because it's an apprenticeship and we need to bring the younger generation in, we're having a hard time because nobody wants to learn at the very bottom. They all go out and they get a degree and want to come right straight in, but there's no degrees for escrow and title.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody wants to learn at the beginning point and move up.
Mm-hmm.
So in today's world, we're still trying to get that younger generation in because it is a very, very awesome career and you can really do well at it. Mm-hmm. And no transaction is ever the same.
Oh, yeah. Well, we definitely understand that.
Mm-hmm. It's fun.
It's fun. A continuous learning process for sure.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think you and I did somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 transactions together last year.
Yes.
And yeah, no, I mean, they all went smoothly. There was one that got challenging, but that wasn't on you. That was some weirdness happened with one of the properties. But, you know, not one of them was the same. You know, no mm-hmm. two were identical, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what it is that you do. You know, from the time you have an agent deliver you the contract package to open escrow and receive the earnest money deposit, what wizardry are you working behind that curtain?
So as your escrow agent, we're the neutral party in the transaction that brings the whole thing together. We represent all parties equally. And when you bring the contract in, we make sure it's fully executed by all parties. Make sure that we've received the earnest money in and that everybody has a copy of that receipt. Once we hit that point, we also order your title insurance, which is an important part of anyone's escrow. And we order that to protect the buyer and the seller.
Can I interrupt mm-hmm. you for a second? With the earnest money that you receive, mm-hmm. when you get that check from a buyer and it's deposited, where does it go? Where does that money go?
We have a trust account, so we have to abide by the same banking regulations as a bank. So
okay.
it's a trust account, and so it sits in there and it gets applied to the buyer's funds that they have to bring in.
Okay, so it's not like a pre-authorization, like when you go to a hotel and you know when they swipe the card and they go, okay, at the end if there's any thing wrong with the room, then
we take it.
Then we actually take it out. This actually is money that's mm-hmm. sitting in that account for the life of the escrow.
Correct.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. and the earnest money is to show that the buyer is actually earnest, they call it, about the contract, that they want to enter into this contract with the seller. Mm-hmm. And that shows them that they're, how do I say it, that they want the home.
Mm-hmm. That's and, their skin in the game, kind of like the down payment with a lender.
Right.
That's their skin in the game with the seller.
Right. And mm-hmm. and it kind of is, it shows the seller that the buyer is wanting to move forward with this. And if the buyer wants to get out of the escrow at a certain point under the contract, they are entitled to their earnest money back. But if it's after those time frames in the contract, as we all know, that there are times that the seller also gets the earnest money back.
Okay, great. So yeah, you were talking a little bit about title insurance. That's ordered right away, like right away.
It is. We like to order it right away to get it out within the inspection period that the buyer has, because that is everything that's recorded on the property. Mm-hmm. And it is their due diligence to review it mm-hmm. and make sure that that is what they want when they're buying it.
Mm-hmm. So it's really important for a buyer to review the title report and what's in it. I know that usually we're good unless you call me.
Right. And go, hey, heads up. Absolutely.
This one's weird.
This one's weird, and this is going to be an issue. And when do you see their, when is their issues? What are the most common things you see that are not going to get title insurance?
They may have put somebody, the seller may have put somebody on title and taken them off real quick. And the person they put on title was married. And since we're a community property state, it created an interest for that other person, even though they took him off 2 days later.
Okay.
And then we have to kind of go backwards in time to find that person, because that person will have to sign off on any interest mm-hmm. for that seller so they can sell the home.
Right. So is that a quit? Is that called a quit claim deed, or is it a disclaimer deed? I'm trying to remember which deed that is.
So a disclaimer deed is done when you're married, and at the time of the purchase, the buyer's spouse is not going on title.
Okay. Got it.
A quit claim deed is the one that is done at the time after. Mm-hmm. So, because they're quit claiming any interest back over to that person.
So that's what you would receive in yes. order to clear the title, the correct. Cloud on title, in order to move forward.
Correct.
Right. Okay. So are there any other reasons why you wouldn't issue title insurance?
Sometimes we've had deaths and people transfer property because they think just because there's a will that they're entitled to it. They still have to go through probate. And you have to have the courts appoint somebody to sign on behalf of the will.
Okay.
And we've had it where people, the person who quit claimed it to the other person died. And then it kept going. Mm-hmm. And they did deeds among themselves without going through a title insurance agency.
So they weren't recorded.
Correct. Well, the deeds were recorded, but there was no title insurance to go back and look to see what they had done in the past. They just kept handing deeds out and cashier's checks between each other, not knowing what was outlying.
So like a family, you know, I inherit a property in my mother's will,
mm-hmm.
but I also owe my brother some money. So I don't have the money, but
here's
let me deed the property to you.
And, yes.
And then my brother owes a bookie money, and he, you know, kind of goes down the line like that.
Right. And then the bookie decides he's going to sell it, and now this new buyer goes, well, I want title insurance. And good thing, because there's so much to clean up, you don't want it.
Right. Full disclosure, I don't think any of my brothers owe bookies money. I don't think. If you do, stop it.
Right. Right. So yes. Those are some of the things that we see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we can find those people. Mm-hmm. we've gone back to old notaries. We've put on our little detective hats and start digging, mm-hmm. and that's all we can do. Mm-hmm. Some of the families, like in that case, didn't want to be bothered. And so, the buyer bought it without title insurance.
Wow.
Knowing all of that, they still bought it.
Okay. And what is a policy? Okay, so let's talk about the title insurance policy and the differences. There's a few different kinds, correct?
Yes. The most common is you have your standard owners mm-hmm. and you have your homeowners. Mm-hmm. The standard owners is usually issued when you have vacant land, mm-hmm. commercial property, if you don't want a survey. Mm-hmm. Mining claims in Prescott. In our area, we have so many mining claims that a standard owner's policy can only be issued.
Okay.
In a lot of the underwriters, that's all they will accept.
Okay. Hmm. And basically, why is that?
Because a mining claim, they can come in and mine on your property.
Okay. So it doesn't matter. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it.
Commercial properties, you have to have the big survey to get that title insurance over to an actual homeowner's or an extended policy, because of the fact that we need to see where all the property lines are, where there's easements. In downtown Prescott is one of a big area where they built a lot of buildings and they built over onto other people's properties. A lot of the surveys, if they're newer, we can still use them. Mm-hmm. If they're not new, we have to kind of review them. Mm-hmm. So hopefully the seller can produce that to the buyer and the buyer doesn't have to go out and get a survey because they take quite some time.
Mm-hmm. What's the rule of thumb lengthwise, time-wise on that?
On the survey?
Yeah. You mentioned that if it was a newer survey, so are we talking a year or two?
I think it's 10? About 6 months.
6 months. Okay.
So, and that's because things can change.
Sure.
You could have a building and in 6 months they add on to the back part of the building and they bring us this survey and it doesn't match. That building was built over onto the next door neighbor's property and they want to file a claim.
Or on an easement or
correct.
Something of that nature.
Fences being built.
Things absolutely. Like, things like that. Simple little things that you don't think about.
Okay, so that's why you would issue a standard policy. So what's the other type of policy?
Homeowner's policy is for the homes. Mm-hmm. We issue those. It title insures, the buyer from when they purchase it till when they sell it. So if their neighbor's fence is over on their yard 5 feet, we're going to title insure against that. Or if the neighbor comes back and says, hey, this fence is over on ours 5 feet and they want it moved. We also also title insures against mechanics liens, which is a big yuck because we want those paid. Yep. Mm-hmm. if that happens, people pull out their title insurance policy and file a claim. It's pretty easy to file a claim on your homeowner's insurance. What else do they cover? They cover from false notaries. Mm-hmm. So if somebody was not really a notary and they notarized documents and things came up later, your title insurance should cover that under your homeowners.
Okay.
And in today's world, those fraud things are growing rampant.
Right. So when somebody's planning to buy a house, does the buyer pay for the title policy or does the seller pay for the policy?
So in that case, normal customary, the seller pays for the title insurance policy.
Why is that?
That is because the seller is giving making sure that he has equitable interest to give to the buyer. And it's in your contract. says they have
The easy answer is because the contract says so.
The contract says so.
But the philosophical reason is more, it's kind of like the earnest money is a show of good faith from the buyer to the seller. That insurance policy is a show of good faith from the seller back to the buyer. Like, hey, yeah, this is my place. You know, I'm allowed to sell it to you.
Right. And if the buyer's getting a loan, the buyer has to pay for a lender's policy for the lender. And that is the same type of title insurance, but it covers the lender from any, again, mechanics liens, any type of claims again that might arise from an old family member that says, hey, my uncle didn't really sign this deed. Because the lender has an interest on that deed of trust that we insured.
So customarily, the seller shouldn't think that somehow he's getting better off or that the buyer's getting better off because, you know, he's not paying for the title policy because he most likely is paying for a policy to the lender anyway.
Correct.
So that does kind of even things up a little bit.
Yeah, it's just kind of sometimes when it gets down to signing my sellers, when I go over those, the agents always tell them in the beginning that they pay for it. But, you know, 30 days down the road, you're packing boxes and you get to me and I'm going over all the numbers there. It's a little, sometimes it's a shocker, but most of the time they're like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
When I say, well, it was here in the contract and your agent went over it with you.
Mm-hmm. And they average about $1,300 to $1,400, I would say. That's a pretty good estimate, wouldn't you say?
It is. The fees are all based upon the sales price.
Okay.
And they're all filed rates.
Oh.
So we just have a standard grid that we go off of, and the higher your sales price, the higher your owner's insurance policy will be. Same with the lender. The higher the lender loan amount, the mm-hmm. higher the price of that is.
Wow. Okay. Well, at least it's, you know, based on some sort of grid.
Yes.
That's good.
Some arbitrary number. This week, $1,200. Next week, title insurance is on sale. So sell your house this week.
Spin the wheel. See where we end up.
Okay. So you go through the title, the process of awarding the title policy. And then what happens? Once you've done that, you start getting some other things together. What does that look like for you?
So depending on what's on that title report, we will order payoffs. From the sellers, we order the HOAs so that can be disclosed to the buyers. The HOA companies send all that out to the buyers. Mm-hmm. And as the process goes, we work with the lender. And then about a week and a half to 2 weeks before the closing, we start gathering everything. We draw the documents up for all parties to sign. We get with the lender and get our loan documents and get everything ready.
Mm-hmm. And usually they see a preliminary settlement statement that kind of gives them the breakdown of their debits and credits.
Yes.
Usually we see that too as the agent involved, just to kind of review it and make sure it makes sense. But when should they expect that when they're in the transaction?
The sellers, I like to get in about 2 weeks before we close. So I send it off to the seller's agent before I even make an appointment with the seller.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I make an appointment with the seller, I try to do it a couple days after I send it to the agent. Mm-hmm. And let the agent know when they're coming in to sign.
Mm-hmm.
And let me know if there's any problems. The buyers, we send that to the buyer's agent once we get loan documents.
Okay.
Because we could send them the preliminary, but until we have loan documents, none of those fees are set in stone for the buyer side.
Okay. So the lender has to tell you what they're charging the buyer. So that is a pretty good round number. That
Correct.
Makes sense. Okay. That's interesting.
And then we ask the buyer to either bring us in a cashier's check or to wire.
How many days before the actual close should they have their down payment in title?
Well, sometimes it has it on the contract, like 3 days prior to close of escrow. And sometimes that's kind of hard because if the loan docs are running behind, We can't get that to the buyer. Mm-hmm. In a perfect world, we would like it a minimum of a day before.
Because it will clear. Does it actually clear, or do you just, I mean, how does that work?
So under the good funds law, wires are instant good funds.
Okay.
And so are the cashier's checks. So we take them and deposit those cashier's checks right away.
Okay.
What about duffel bags full of cash?
No.
Why? So I have this weird dream. It's the silliest thing I know, but I would love to just walk in to an office like yours and just buy a house.
With cash.
Yeah.
With your mattress full of money. Cash.
Yeah. Why duffel can't bag. I do that?
Yeah.
Because first of all, we have to count it. I don't have time to count all your money. Sorry. And then
you can weigh it. It's right. Pretty accurate.
And then if we take it to the bank, we get 1099'd on it. We're a title company. We don't get 1099 because we have to put all that into our account.
Third party.
Right. But the banks don't see it that way. They're like, here's cash. The government says you can only deposit so much cash per day into certain accounts. And I have $500,000 to give them because that's how much you brought me.
That's silly. Not silly that on your part, but I mean, it's just.
But and honestly,
it's a fantasy of mine. I would love to just walk in with a very nice briefcase full of cash and pay for something.
I had large, a buyer like a house or a car. Tell me that because it said cash at close on the contract,
yeah.
And she was going to bring that to me.
Stellar.
And I said, I can't accept it. You have to bring us a cashier's check a cashier's check or a wire. And
so even for like a small amount of money, mm-hmm. cash is no bueno.
No.
Well, and it doesn't, it's like not all the money cash. That you need to bring too, because I think some people think this is what I agreed to pay and mm-hmm. they don't think about closing costs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So can you give me kind of an idea of what to expect with closing costs from the title perspective?
As far as a dollar amount or what?
What is like the escrow fee, for instance? Is that something they both pay? Is it, right. How does that work?
So we went over the title insurance. So the seller pays the owner's policy. The buyer pays their lender's policy and any lender's endorsements, because a lot of lenders will ask for different types of endorsements. A lot of those endorsements will be like a PUD endorsement, which stands for Planned Unit Development, which means you have some type of CC&Rs on the property. Mm-hmm. There's a condominium endorsement if it's a condominium. So those are different things that the lender's underwriters require. Those are things like that we find out on the lender's instructions once we get loan docs. That's why I said until we get them, we can't shore up those numbers. Then we have the escrow fee. The escrow fee is typically split 50-50 between the buyer and the seller.
Okay.
The recording fee is split as well between the buyer and the seller. Then we have, if the seller wants to wire FedEx his payoff out or his proceeds, he's responsible for his own fees on that. Mm-hmm. And then the buyer is responsible for their overnight back to the lender for their loan documents. Mm-hmm. We have proration of taxes, which is kind of common, and HOA.
Right. So that's actually mm-hmm. not a fee. It's yeah. really, it's just being applied to what they would owe.
Right.
Okay.
You're just collecting all the money to give mm-hmm. to all the money that needs to go to anybody. Comes to you first.
Correct. I'm the keeper of the funds.
But not cash money.
No. Well, you know, on occasions we've taken a, you know, if they've had to come in with $40 or
yeah.
$60 and then we run it to the bank. It's just, we don't like to keep cash. It's just not what we do.
Fair. It's not my favorite answer, but I'll accept it.
If you buy something for maybe $500, I might take it for you. But when you find it's that, let me know. I know.
So when a buyer comes in to sign their docs, because there's so many loan documents, it seems like it's a huge stack. How many pieces of paper do they actually sign?
It depends on the lender. I've had loan packages as low as 53 pages and as high as 164.
Oh my gosh.
And you should what see their eyes get really big.
164 page loan document.
What constitutes
that? Oh yeah, like what makes that happen? Why? Just that's always going to be my question is why.
You're signing your life away. Why? Right. That's why.
But 164 pages is,
you know, most of ludicrous. It most of it, what we see is disclosures, you okay. know, from the lender. And the lenders do that to protect themselves from the consumer coming back at them, which anymore, everybody, you know, I don't blame them because they have to protect themselves and their interest in that property because they don't want to lose their interest.
Their investment, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some lenders are more strict on those disclosures and hold harmless from everything under the sun, and some mm-hmm. are not as strict. But mostly it's disclosures that we see that make up the package so big.
I remember there was a deal that you and I did last year where somehow the young lady that we were working with had changed her name like 25 times. Like it was three full pages of, have you ever gone by this name?
Yeah. Yes.
It was crazy.
It was crazy. And the lender was so wonderful on that one to work with me, because when I saw her name at first, I called him immediately and said, what name is are the loan documents going to be in? And it needs to match their driver's license. Because that is common. Mm-hmm. And I do believe at the very last minute, because all wires in and out of any institution go through the federal clearinghouse. And if I remember right, our wonderful buyer, because she had so many different names, their loan proceeds
got red flagged.
Got red flagged
at the feds.
Yep. And they kept it. And so we were scrambling to get it unstuck. And we still did the same day.
We got it happen. We made it happen the same day.
But
no one was certain that we were going to. But
the lady with many aliases.
Yes.
Yes. It's awesome.
But yeah, it happened and it worked out.
We made it work.
So one of the things that I think maybe some people don't know about is that you also service notes and seller, like when somebody decides to do seller financing addendums, but they want to be the bank as mm-hmm. a seller. What is Title's role in that, and how does that work?
So what we do is we look at the seller carry back addendum that all parties have agreed upon, and we start drawing up the note and deed of trust based on that. Normally there are account servicing fees which are agreed upon in that addendum, where either the buyer can pay it, the seller can pay it, or it's split. And then you also have your monthly fee, and same thing, buyer and seller can pay it. They can, or either one of them can pay it, or they can split it. Mm-hmm. Once we draw up all the note, we send it to the agents for them to review too, because we don't want a big, if something else was agreed upon and we don't have an addendum or anything like that, we don't want everybody to come in and say, this isn't what we had.
Right. Well, and amortization schedules and
yes.
balloon payments. And I mean, that can get pretty crazy and hairy pretty quickly. So, you know, having that third party there to draw it all up and make sure that it's ready to go, I think is wonderful to have, and protects both parties for sure.
It does. It does. And bringing them all in and having everybody on the same page, they're mm-hmm. a little bit happier than if they knew just we've had sellers try to draw their own documents and bring them in. It doesn't work.
Yes, yes.
Or no. The buyer will send it to their attorney and then the attorney overrides our documents and tries to change all the language. And that doesn't work either. Mm-mm. So
they get paid by the word.
Right. Apparently. But they are using our documents. They're
Yeah, but they get paid for every word in there that they change. I think that must be the standard fee.
Right. And our documents are standard across the board. You mm-hmm. know, they're not
nice, anything. Easy,
yes.
Pre-reviewed boilerplate.
Yes. And so when people start sending them, when our buyers and sellers start sending them out to their attorneys and these attorneys start changing all the verbiage, then we step back and say, hold on a minute, either you guys can produce me one you all agree upon because it can't be our form at that point because mm-hmm. oh, they've my gosh. Made too many changes and, yeah. and we don't want the liability.
Okay. One of the things that I have taken advantage of with title companies is using title as a way to collect rents. And I think it's brilliant, and I want to make sure that we touch base with this because this is awesome. I personally think it's wonderful because then you don't have to be the landlord knocking on the door to collect rents. You can use a title company and they can drop rent off at the title company. Explain that. Love it.
So you can bring us your rental agreement. What you have to remember is there is no title insurance on it. We are only a collection. We're not even a collection agency.
You're a depository, basically.
Correct. And if you call us, the account servicing company, and you haven't received rent, they'll send out a statement for you. But you do have to remember, though, we don't
enforce anything.
No.
Right?
And we don't mandate the Landlord-Tenant Act, mm-hmm. which that still falls under the landlord to do. Mm-hmm. We don't do the eviction process either. Mm-hmm. We just collect the money. And then at the end of the year, send whoever a statement.
And that's great for everyone, especially if you're trying to build credit or try to get a loan as a renter mm-hmm. to show that you've paid your rent on time and that it went to a third party that has a record of it versus giving it directly to your landlord and maybe not having a documented report at the end of the year. And I think that's great because then you can prove that you paid your rent. The, mm-hmm. the landlord can't say that you didn't. And mm-hmm. and then also it's beneficial to the landlord because then you can hand that report to your
accountant
at the end of the year. And
it's easy accounting and it's just a win-win. And it's not very expensive.
And if you're renting from a private party, you know, if you're on the renter side of that, mm-hmm. Because somebody at this table who shall remain nameless, rented a home from a family member for a number of years.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, just went down to the bank once a month and made a deposit into their account. Mm-hmm. Not super great when then you try and stop renting that home and buy a house.
Yes.
So, this is good for both the landlord and the tenant.
Correct.
In a lot of ways, because then again, it's
it takes actual it out of the proof. Family.
That part, the family part was not the issue. It was the lender part when I was trying to get proof. A loan and maybe there were receipts created to document all of the rent that we had paid for
years.
5 years.
Oh,
well, and I honestly think it's important to get, because you don't enforce any sort of Landlord-Tenant Act or your job is just to report information and to collect information. So like, for instance, my personal experience was I went through kind of the year and I saw that the tenant didn't actually pay one of the months, like back in March, and the title company doesn't really say, you know, hey, everyone, they didn't pay their rent. That's not what their job is.
Right.
So they're not a whistleblower. So you have to be really careful if it's a direct deposit into your account that you're paying attention to when they deposited it. Mm-hmm. Was there a late fee? You have to sometimes enforce that late fee because that's not...
It's not title's job.
So, but overall, I think it's a great tool that not enough people utilize. Mm-hmm. And I really think that I just wanted to make sure everyone knows about it. It's pretty awesome. So I don't know if you can tell I'm excited about it.
We're just about out of time, yeah. But one of my favorite things to do in these conversations is ask you about your biggest, worst, most terrible nightmare in this business. You've been around for a while. Mm-hmm. So I know you've seen some things.
I have. And I think one of my biggest challenges was my sellers got divorced. And he had signed a quitclaim deed over to his wife. And it was not a good divorce. And as a title company, we look at your signatures. We really do. And on the original vesting deed and the original deed of trust, it wasn't his signature that matched on the quitclaim deed. And I was not allowed to contact him, according to the wife. So I had to run down the notary and see if this was really him. And it ended up, the seller's wife confessed that she was in signing loan documents and her husband was working. And the escrow officer said, go ahead and sign for him without a power of attorney. So all the documents, all the lender's documents were signed by her. So it's a huge issue. When it comes to things like that, on knowing who your escrow officer is.
Wow. So then what happened? What happened because of that?
So the notary, I sent her an overnight document. I tried to call her first because you can get their phone numbers off of the notary website. And she wouldn't talk to me. And
I can't imagine why not.
Well, that wasn't the bad, that was not the escrow officer. This one was the one that did the quitclaim deed for the ex-husband. Okay. And I sent her the proper documentations according to the notary logbook that you have to follow. And she sent it to us and we were able to record. And because they were selling it, it took the liability off the original title company that did that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was kind of a scary little thing when I called the other title company. I go, hey, we have a little issue. So
I have a problem.
Yeah. Can you kind of help me with this? Because we need to figure this out.
Wow.
But it is, it all worked out. The buyer didn't know. They didn't have a clue. The seller's agent knew. I had to inform him. I'm all about disclosing, but I'm all about too making it a good experience for everyone. So because I got it cleared off, the buyer's agent and the buyer never ever knew.
Well, that's a happy ending.
Yeah, it is a happy ending. It was a little stressful, but it was happy.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, that's a fun one. Well, thank you so much, Kathy, for sitting down with us today. We really do appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you're over at Driggs Title. I will magically make your phone number and contact information appear on the screen right about now. And again, just thank you so much. If you have any questions, feel free to get in touch with Kathy. And then obviously, if you have any questions about buying or selling a home, get in touch with either Carissa or I. We'd love to help you out. And until next week, hope you're having a great day, and we'll see you soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye.